The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Welcome to In the Garden with the University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Tina Spindler, and I'm here with fellow Master Gardener Katrina Kirkaby, as we are the first week of every month for our show, This Month in the Garden. It's February.
It's February, Tina.
How about that?
Oh, gosh. My gosh.
Sailed through the holidays, sailed through January, and
it's February already.
Yeah, 2018.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there's a lot to do in the garden this month, isn't there?
There is. I know some folks may think it's the dead of winter, and, of course, in other places in the country or up in the mountains here, it is the dead of winter. But if you are in Southern California, this is a very busy month in the garden because it's, if I had to characterize it in one phrase, it's a get-ready month.
It is a definitely get-ready, get-ready here, get-ready there, get-ready everywhere in your garden.
Yeah. Now, if you're like me with the holidays, from mid-November until, you know, the first or second week in January, my poor garden doesn't see much of me at all. Because there's just too much going on over the holidays.
I think that's with most of us. And fortunately, it's quiet time in the garden, too.
It is. But as we hopefully, if folks listen to the January show, they will have gotten some of the January tasks completed, mainly the pruning of dormant things like fruit trees, deciduous fruit trees. And though our roses never go dormant, we do prune them in January to force them to go a little bit dormant.
So if you haven't, do it.
Yeah, do it in early February. If you haven't pruned your roses, do it the first week of this month, if you can. And the other thing we suggest also is to spray your roses and dormant deciduous fruit trees in January with what we call a dormant spray. And that helps you have less disease and less pest problems, bug problems, later in the year. We won't go into the varieties of dormant spray because it depends on the type of plant, but you can go to your local reputable nursery and tell them what kind of plants that you have. Generally, the dormant sprays are either oils, which smother bugs, which, gosh, that's just so fun to think that you can go out and smother things.
Oh, Tina! and the other side of Tina's paper. Yeah.
Well, if they're eating my plants, they're fair game, right?
I used to rescue snails.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no more.
I stomp on them now. And then the other type of dormant spray is an antifungal dormant spray, which helps prevent those fungal diseases like powdery mildew and black spots and rust and other things. So if you didn't do that in January, try to get that done early this month. And then the other thing that we were suggesting that you might want to do in January is plant seeds indoors for your warm season flowers and veggies to give them a head start indoors so that they'd be ready to plant outdoors in March when we switch to our warm season gardens.
And the reason why we do that is because you get a better choice. You get to find what you want. There's just a lot more available in catalogs than in a garden center.
Yes. Now, a lot of our nurseries have gotten a lot better about having a variety of edibles than they used to. But still, seed catalogs are so much fun. And if you want specific plants, like I love blue curly kale, that's my favorite kale, and sometimes I can't find it in the nursery, so I get seeds every year so that I'm sure that I have blue curly kale in my garden.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Do you have anything, Katrina, special varieties that you like to grow that you can't normally get?
Oh, goodness. I more like to experiment. You know, something that I haven't tried before, just always something a little new in the garden.
So that's always fun, yeah.
And also kales. I like having a lot of different kind of kales.
Yeah, they're kind of my, I used to say my new favorite vegetable, but it's been my new favorite vegetable for about 4 years, so I guess it's not new anymore. But I do love planting, growing, and eating kale because it's pretty bulletproof. If you're a new gardener, it's a great veggie to start out with because it's pretty hard to fail with them.
Yeah. Try Cosmic Kale.
Yeah. Katrina's, and it's really pretty. Katrina's favorite is Cosmic Kale, and she even puts it in her flower beds because it's so pretty.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mix vegetables and flowers all the time anyways, and it confuses people.
And like, the bugs, too,
wow,
probably.
That looks like, what kind of plant is that? They're looking, it's next to my roses, and I said, oh, it's something called a cauliflower.
Yeah.
It was just in the flower bed. That was really pretty. It's a great big white head, but it just caught, no one kind of got it because it wasn't where it was supposed to be.
Yeah, it's great idea, too, especially a lot of us have small yards, so we may not even have room for separate veggie gardens. So mixing your veggies in with your decorative plants is, it's okay.
It is okay. You have everybody's permission to do that.
Yes. So now let's get into February, since we told you about your January tasks that you could hurry up and complete if you didn't get them done. But now February is basically the month when you should get ready, because we're about to switch. Hard to believe, because we had such a warm winter that we even had winter. But March is when our warm season starts. In California, we only get two seasons, warm and cool. And I think we're not getting much cool anymore.
I know. It's just amazing. You know, we really had our first rain in the beginning of January.
Yeah. So let's hope we still get rain in February and March so that we don't go back into that drought. So let's talk about the things that you can do in February to get ready for your transition to warm season gardening in March. And of course...
Oh, wow, where should we start?
Get ready. It all starts with the soil, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So the first thing I like to do is go out in February, hopefully in between rainstorms, because we are hoping we get more rain. But in between rainstorms, go out and just take a good look at your whole garden, whether it's veggies or decorative. And because it's been a little bit wintry, you may see some stuff that's done, right? Plants that just aren't doing well anymore. Maybe, as in my garden, my broccoli went ahead and bolted into flowers before I really got any heads of broccoli. So I want to pull those out. And any of the lettuces that are, you know, I've harvested to death and they're ready to be pulled out. Or if you have peas that have gotten powdery mildew and you want to pull those out. So just start cleaning everything up. If it's not diseased and you compost, chop it up, put it in your compost bin. In your decorative garden, you know, take a look at your perennials. If they're like my garden and it was too hot to really attend to them in the fall, they may need to be trimmed up.
Trimmed up, exactly.
They may have some dead wood. They may have a lot of dead leaves. I know my bearded iris are looking pretty sad, so I need to...
You know, I even take down some of... I don't like hedges, per se, but I really cut back a lot of... I let my hedges kind of look more wild.
Mm-hmm.
But February is when I really whack the heck out of them. You know, I want to bring them to size, or I don't want them to get too big for next, you know, for the summer, because they'll be growing. But now the days are starting to get a little longer, and... You know, things are starting to grow again, and so that's what I really like. I have this really long hedge, and that's when I whack it back.
Yeah. It's remember, we're going to be getting, you know, the days, as Katrina said, longer days, which means more sunshine. The soil's going to start warming up, and that means all plants are going to start taking off and giving you a ton of growth. So you want to get them in as healthy a condition as possible so that they can have good growth, good blooming, and good health. And if there's dead wood in them, if they're overcrowded and they need to be divided or they're planted too close together, now's a good time to be cleaning them out and also making some edits. If you have some things in your garden that just aren't performing well or constantly give you problems.
Or you really have to work at them.
Yeah, we give you permission to take them out.
Exactly. I've had plants that I have kept, and they've just been a pain because maybe we put them in before we knew what we were doing, and they got too big, and I spent half my summer cutting them back. And finally, I took them out, and oh my God, goodness, it's like, why didn't I do this years ago?
Yeah, exactly. So it's first of all a good time to do an assessment of your yard, do a big cleanup. Start a compost pile if you've never done that before with all of the trimmings and compost, homemade compost is awesome. We're not going to talk about that, but we do have a show on composting. You can go to our website.
And what's the easiest way to do that, if I know a lot of our listeners are driving, is just Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California, because there's other Master Gardeners and there's other Orange Counties in the United States. So Google us, find us, and we have all kinds of podcasts that you can listen to.
We do. So let's talk about some specifics now, and let's start with trees, with our fruit trees, trees that give us stuff. We recommended that you do pruning of your deciduous fruit trees. Those would be your trees like apples, plums, pears, peaches, nectarines, apricots. Those are all deciduous fruit trees. And last month was the time to give those pruning. A lot of them will start budding out this month in February. And that means that they're going to be ready to put out new leaves, put out blossoms, and the blossoms, of course, then turn into fruit. So you want to make sure that you're giving your trees a little bit of attention this month so that you get a good crop and have super healthy trees. So I'm going to mention a few trees specifically so that our listeners know what's a good idea to do for their fruit trees. First of all, for avocado trees, if anybody's lucky enough to have an avocado. Do you have an avocado, Katrina?
Yes, do you have an avocado?
I've killed three. Does that count?
Oh, my goodness. Next time I'm over, I'll bring you avocados.
That would be awesome.
Well, we have a plethora of avocados right now.
I would love that. I have a baby one that I planted last year after I killed three. I'm now. My problem was is I kept trying to plant them on my slope, and avocados love slopes, just so everyone knows. But my irrigation system was not very effective on the slope, so I kept losing them because I was lazy and didn't convert the overhead spray to a drip system, which is what I needed on that slope because the water was just running down the hill and
not watering the tree.
Not watering the
tree.
You
know, when you should see Tina's yard. It belongs in a magazine. And when she said she killed three of them, like, how did she do that?
By putting them in the wrong place and not watering them properly.
Guess we're all human, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, if you
avocado trees, so what should we do to avocado trees?
Well, I don't know if you do this. Yours may be well established and just go crazy on their own. But in general, you want to begin feeding avocados this month because they're pretty heavy feeders. And so you want to start doing it this month and go ahead and read whatever type of fertilizer you choose to buy, whether it's an organic-based fertilizer or a synthetic-based fertilizer, the dosage, how much you want to put on, you need to follow the instructions that are on each individual package because organic fertilizers generally are not as strong, so you need to use a higher quantity of those, and the synthetic fertilizers are stronger and you don't want to use too much or you can burn your trees. But in general, the way you want to apply it is you never want to apply it to wet ground or to dry ground. You want to make sure that you've either had rain or you've irrigated that ground before you apply the fertilizer. And then you want to sprinkle the fertilizer around the drip line and about 18 inches beyond the drip line, because that's where the feeder roots are. And so you want that food to be accessible to the roots that are the ones that are going to utilize it the most for the tree.
Excellent.
Now, do you have to fertilize yours anymore, Katrina, or are they so mature they just go?
It just goes.
Ah, so lucky.
It just goes. Maybe I'll fertilize it this year and see what happens. It just keeps growing.
Well, if you're getting plenty of avocados already, maybe you don't need to. The other thing that avocados do like is they like to not have bare soil. So we typically tell folks not to rake up their avocado leaves, but to let them lie there and provide their own mulch. But you can also add, mulch to the underneath your tree, and that does a bunch of different things. A, it keeps weeds down. B, it also keeps the soil temperature regulated so it doesn't get too hot or too cold, and it conserves water by acting as an insulation.
Now, Tina, what do you tell people who want to fertilize their avocado tree, but they have a good amount of leaves underneath it?
That's a great question. What you can do is you can gently rake the leaves temporarily away from that drip line and put the fertilizer then in contact with the soil. Because to be honest, fertilizers, particularly organic fertilizers, when they come in contact with the soil, have a little bit better performance being directly in contact with the soil. And then I would just, you know, rake those leaves back over the area where you spread the fertilizer. But if that's too much work, then sprinkle the fertilizer. And then, although drip irrigation is advised for trees, you know, in the long run, because you can have them water for longer and deeper, when you do fertilize, it is a good idea to, if you're doing it particularly on top of mulch, to have a session of overhead irrigation so that that water can wash that fertilizer, you know, down into the soil. If you have dry fertilizer just sitting on top of a bunch of mulch, it's not going to do much. So you do want to irrigate thoroughly and get it down.
And if you don't have overhead sprinklers, you could get a hose.
And one of those old-fashioned sprinkle heads that you put on it.
Yeah. And just water it in.
Yeah. So go ahead and do that with your avocado. Again, read the package direction. The simplest thing is to buy a fertilizer that says it's for citrus and avocados. That's usually how those bags are labeled. And then you know for sure that you're getting a fertilizer that has the micronutrients
and the right balance
in the right balance for, and the macronutrients in the right balance for that type of plant. And then as you read the bag, it will tell you the frequency with which to fertilize based on that particular type of fertilizer. Let's see. Let's talk about citrus now.
Oh, citrus.
Now moving on from avocados to citrus, our two favorite California fruits, right? Avocados and citrus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you do to your citrus this time of year? Mine got whipped by the Santa Ana winds this year.
Well, my citrus are in sad shape because when we were back in the drought, I was trying to really conserve water, and my citrus are up on my slope also, and I wasn't paying attention, and so they didn't get enough water. So they've been struggling ever since, which is very sad, but slowly but surely I'm trying to get them back to good health. So one of the things that you need to be aware of is that in February, citrus pests start to get more active. And so there's a few things that we can do to cut that activity down. And the first time I read this, I thought it was kind of crazy. I'd never thought to do it before. But do you ever wash your citrus trees?
I have.
You have?
I have. I've washed all my trees.
There you go. Because you know they like a bath once in a while.
Well, actually, they look prettier, too. Like before a big event, I'll just wash my trees. I mean, not the really tall ones, but, you know, the ones in the yard and some of the bushes. Because it takes the – I live up in the hills where it gets dirty, so that's the reason why I wash these things. But
well, it's actually a good idea to do this because, well, often we don't get hard enough rains to wash them off by nature. And so what happens is the pests will sometimes have a just really happy time congregating on those unwashed trees, on the undersides of leaves and on the bark and so on. So it actually is a good idea to take that brass nozzle that we all have for our hose, the one that you can twist and get a pretty strong jet of water, and to twist it, not to the hardest setting so that you're going to blast the branches off the tree, but you know, to a strong enough setting where you feel like you are washing a car, you know, you're going to get that dirt off, and angle the hose up under the leaves and, you know, into the center of the tree and just wash it off really well, and it will disturb the insects. And the other thing that you can do is if you have one of the attachable sprayers to your hose, is you can put a couple of drops of dish soap in, you know, the bottle,
the container.
The container that attaches, and use that because the little bit of dish soap, or you can use insecticidal soap as well, and that will also then coat the bodies of any remaining insects. It's a gentle insecticide, and basically you hopefully will interrupt that life cycle of those insects overwintering on your trees so that they have a better shot this spring at being insect free.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So the other thing you have to remember about citrus is, do you get a lot of ants in your
Mm-mm.
citrus trees?
Mm-mm.
I do. And if your citrus trees, if you see a lot of ants, then odds are you're also going to see other insects, because those darn ants are really good farmers, and they actually farm things like aphids and scale, and so they encourage the proliferation of those insects on your trees. So if you can control your ants, you're probably also going to control the populations of those other insects. And one way to do that is to use, you know, ant baits. But sometimes those are only effective for a little while because the bait runs out. And so one of the things that I do on especially the citrus trees on my slope, because I don't like to climb up on the slope all that often, is I use a product called Tanglefoot.
Tanglefoot.
Do you ever use that, Katrina?
Oh, my goodness. I know about Tanglefoot.
Yeah.
How well does it work for you?
It works great for ants. It's kind of messy, and so it's kind of a pain, but I only do it once a year, about this time of year. And I actually...
Oh, tell them what it is.
Yeah, it's a sticky...
That sounds a funny name, Tanglefoot.
Yeah, it's a sticky substance, and I guess I should study what it's actually made out of, but I don't know for sure. But anyway, it's very sticky, and what happens is you put it around the base of the trunk, and the ants try to climb up the trunk, and they get caught in the tanglefoot, and they can't go any further, so it stops them from getting into your tree. But you don't want to put it right on the trunk. So what I do is I save tights, you know,
mm-hmm.
old winter that you wear in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
and because they're stretchy, mm-hmm. right, and I cut them into strips that I can tie around the trunk of the tree. And then you can put a little piece of plastic wrap over the top of it, you know, just tie a piece mm-hmm. around it. And then you put the Tanglefoot on top of that. But be sure to wear rubber gloves when you do it, because it's real sticky. And if you get it on your hands, it's hard to get off. But if you get it on a cheap pair of rubber gloves, you can just throw them away when you're done.
And if you got to put it in place, too. You also have to think if you have animals or small children.
Yes, exactly. So if you have dogs that like to go up and, you know, sniff your citrus trees, you know, I don't know if you want to use it. Or at least maybe put a little bit of chicken wire, you know, a foot away from it so that they can't quite get to the trunk of the tree. But it works great. And when I do that, I have a lot less pests, because the ants aren't there to encourage the pests. So it takes a little bit of time, but, you know, I have 8 citrus trees, and I can probably do all 8 of them in half an hour. So it's pretty quick. And then what about our deciduous fruit trees? Well, they're going to want you to start feeding them. What deciduous fruit trees do you have, Katrina?
Oh, my goodness. What do we have? We have peaches and figs, and what else do we have? Apricots and apples and...
You have any plums?
We have a new plum tree.
A new plum
My
this
favorite
year?
Plum tree died.
Oh, bummer.
It was the best plum tree in the whole wide world.
So
it's
sad.
Not replaceable. We used to sit under that plum tree and just eat plums.
Oh,
that was
wow.
the best plum tree. What do you have, Tina?
Pretty similar. I have one peach, one apricot, and 2 espaliered apples and an espaliered pear. And so what we need to do this month for those guys is, remember, they're going to start blossoming the end of this month or March, depends on the variety you have. And so you want to give them some food so that they can make pretty flowers, but more importantly, good fruit. So February is the month to start feeding your deciduous fruit trees. Also, if you didn't spray, or in the case of peaches, to prevent peach leaf curl in particular, It's suggested that you dormant spray those actually three times. Three times, yeah. At least twice. Peaches are prone to peach leaf curl. And it looks really ugly. And if you let it go on and it distorts the leaves, for years and years, then your peach tree may lose some of its vigor.
And they're such pretty trees.
Yeah, you kind of don't want to look at the ugly peach leaf curl. So November is the first time. As soon as it loses its leaf, that's the first time you're supposed to spray. Then in December or January, and then usually in February. Again, it depends on the variety of your peach tree, whether it's early or late. But right as you start seeing the buds swell, but before they blossom, is the last time that you want to spray. And you can use a copper-based spray or a sulfur-based spray to prevent that fungal disease of peach leaf curl. So do that if you haven't already. And then I always want to make sure that I mulch the trees after I fertilize them, put the fertilizer on the bare ground first. First, before you put the fertilizer down, rake up any debris that's underneath there. Then spread the fertilizer, as I described for the avocado, around the drip line and a little ways out. And then water it in really well and put mulch on top of the soil under the peach tree out to the drip line, or any deciduous, not just peaches. And for citrus, too. It doesn't just need to be deciduous, for the reasons that we described, why the mulch is good. So fertilizing and mulching, that's what you want to do for your trees this month.
Yay.
Yay. All right. Let's see. What else should we talk about? There's so much to prepare for. Should we talk about, since we're talking about edibles, why don't we just keep on the topic of edibles for a minute.
Where would you like to start?
Well, we mentioned it was still time to plant seeds, start seeds indoors of your edibles if you wanted, and also your decorative plants if you like to start flowers from seed, the warm season varieties. But this is a really interesting time of year in Southern California because you can still plant another crop of your cool season veggies. So if you've already harvested all your lettuces, and spinach.
I'd probably get six packs right now.
Yeah.
Instead of seeds.
But you can do a whole second.
But you do lettuce with seeds. They come up really fast.
Yeah, you can do lettuce seeds. I wouldn't do broccoli seeds or cauliflower seeds or anything like that. But if you want to, you can plant new sets of your cool season crops. And just a reminder, those are any of the greens, lettuces, cabbages, kale, spinach, any of the cool crops, again, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and the peas, and of course any root vegetables, the carrots, radishes, onions. But remember, when you're thinking about doing that next month in March, you can start planting warm season vegetables.
Oh, isn't it crazy? Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
So for me, February is always like the biggest dilemma.
Do I add a little more here? Because I need to say it won't be ready next month because I want to plant tomatoes.
Yeah.
Right?
So do I want a row of peas or do I want to save that trellis for tomatoes? So
it's a decision-making month, too.
Yeah. So
when it comes to your vegetable garden, you got to decide because a lot of us have limited amount of room. So
exactly.
It's like, am I going to have more of this or am I going to start planting that?
Yeah. So
I kind of do a mixture. I keep some stuff going and then I put in new stuff.
Exactly. So I will probably, like when I said I have to pull out those broccoli plants that went to flower, I probably won't plant anything there because
next month.
I know next month I'm going to want that space to plant warm season stuff, bush beans or new peppers or, one of a new zucchini or some other kind of squash. So just keep that in mind as you're looking at your veggie garden and you're ready to pull some stuff out. You can plant new cool season stuff or you might want to save the space for your warm season stuff. If you are saving the soil for your warm season stuff, you can give yourself a head start, though, by going ahead and amending that soil and getting it all ready for the warm season.
Then you'll have less work to do next month.
Yeah. So that is another thing that you can do. Right now, already, it's time for us to let you know that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to KUCI.org. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
Well done, Tina. All right, where should we go from here?
Well, you know me. Can we talk about flowers for a little while?
Oh. Yes, of course, Tina.
Yay.
This, well, we will never have a show without talking about flowers with Tina's involved.
Yeah, not when I'm here. So let's talk about roses. We pruned and sprayed our roses last month, and they should be leafing out. And so just like our fruit trees that are about to bud and leaf out, our roses are going to want some food as well so that they can have a spectacular first bloom, which happens about April around here. So give your roses some fertilizer.
Love and nurture those roses right now. Yeah. Tina's smiling. She's already seeing the blooms.
It's that April bloom is my favorite because it is just so spectacular and lush. So, and then the other thing you can think about doing, we talked about last month planting bare root roses because it was bare root season in January. Probably you're not going to see bare roots in the nurseries anymore. So what you'll start seeing now are them planted in containers because the nurseries take any of their bare root stuff that's left over and they put them in containers.
And charge more money.
But if you were just busy and you didn't get to planting bare root, but you want to get a couple more roses, it's a great time to do it in February, March, April, even May. So I would heartily advise you to continue doing that. I'm just going to give a few names of some roses that are easy and more disease resistant in case folks didn't get to plant last time. And these are kind of some that I have experience with that are my favorites. So in the hybrid tea roses, those are the ones that are pretty tall, 4 feet-ish around here, and they have the long stems with single blossoms on. Those are called hybrid teas. And one of my favorites is Just Joey, which is an apricot-colored one, and it has a nice smell, so I like that one. And then a pink one that I've had good luck with is called First Prize. So those are two fun ones for hybrid teas that are pretty disease-resistant. And then I actually love the Floribundas. So the Floribundas are actually the ones that get kind of a cluster of roses at the end of a stem. And I love those because they don't look as skeletonized, sticky. Mm-hmm. The hybrid teas tend to be kind of stick-like, right? They're not lush shrubs. Whereas the Floribundas are more leafy and because they have... Prettier plant. Because they have their blooms in a cluster, when they bloom in the garden, it feels more floriferous, more of a show. So I love Floribundas. And a couple of my favorites are French Lace and Sexy Rexy is my other one. For one reason, because I love the name. It cracks me up, Sexy Rexy. It's a pink, and it is just the cutest, happiest, bloomiest little rose in the garden. Now, its first bloom is its most prolific. But it does bloom in smaller amounts throughout the year. And it gets very little disease. I sometimes at the end of the season will get a little bit of black spot on it. But at least in my yard, it's relatively disease-free. French Lace is a really pretty white one. We all do a lot of the iceberg roses. And they're fabulous. I have scads of them in my yard, too. But French Lace, if you're kind of tired of the icebergs, is another good white. For climbers, the lady banks are fabulous. They kind of grow wild here, so you need a big space. I have them over my trash enclosure. We have a little trellis-like structure, and it's probably, 12 feet by 10 feet, and that lady banks covers the entire thing.
Wow.
And when it goes off, it looks like there's a pink cloud over that trash
and your driveway.
Yeah, you see it when you drive up our driveway. So that's a great one, but do give it space.
Space.
And it would be great for climbing over something, a gazebo or something like that. So I do love Lady Banks. And let's see, what else? Grandifloras, those are like hybrid teas, but they have clusters of blooms like floribundas. And they get tall, so they get 5 to 6 feet tall. I love grandifloras. And one of my favorites, if you like yellow, is gold medal. Or tournament of roses is a great pink one. And, of course, my favorite rose of all is fame. But I think it's out of production, so I hesitate to even mention it because it's not in production anymore. But it's a hot pink rose. If you can find it, it's awesome. It doesn't have a scent, but the flowers last on the plant for 2 weeks or more. And in the house cut, they last for a week or more. So it's one of my favorite roses, yeah. Not sure why it's out of production.
Is that fame or flame?
Fame, F-A-M-E. Yeah. So, yeah, so those are some rose suggestions if you still want to plant roses this month. And for your existing roses, give them some food.
Feed them.
They will appreciate
Everything's
that.
Hungry this
yeah.
month.
And keep your eye out for aphids, because that new growth on your roses is tender and the aphids love them. So when you see aphids, you can just rub them off with your fingers. Or take that hose nozzle again.
Shoot them with the hose.
Shoot them off. They're really stupid. When they fall to the ground, they're just done. but do keep an eye on them so they don't get out of control. Okay, moving on to other flowers. You probably don't grow fuchsias, do you, Katrina? It's too hot at your house, isn't it?
Yeah, no fuchsias for me. How about for you?
I try to grow some in, you know, under canopies of trees because I do love them. But it gets pretty hot in Irvine too, so I don't grow a lot. But people who live on the coast, Newport Beach, Huntington Beach, great plant for them. And if you have fuchsias, it's a good time of year to gently cut them back, because fuchsias bloom on new growth. And so the more new growth that you stimulate, and when you trim them back, then you're stimulating more new growth, you'll get more blossoms. So this is a good month to trim back your fuchsias. Same thing if you have them in hanging baskets. You want to trim up those hanging baskets. And also, in hanging baskets, it's always a good idea to refresh the soil. And so it's a good time of year to, you know, when you trim them back, they're going to be manageable. Pop them out of those hanging baskets. Put a little bit of new fresh soil in, brush some of the old soil off.
Tickle them a little bit. She's showing what she's doing right here. She's just tickling the roots right there to get the old soil off.
Yeah, not too much. You don't want to shock them into
gently.
Being dead, but get a little bit of the old soil off and then put them back in the baskets with a little new soil, give them some gentle fertilizer, and now that you've trimmed them up and given them some food, they'll start having a lot of new growth. And then next month in March, you can actually pinch them back again another time, and they'll send out even more new growth, and then you'll just be covered with blossoms when they're ready to bloom.
Oh, now I want to have one.
Yeah, I know. Find a shady spot.
Shady and cool. It's a little hard.
Yeah, it's a little hard for where you live, yeah. Okay, so for the rest of your flower garden, your blooming garden, if you have perennial plants, like Katrina knows, I have tons of Shasta daisies. That's my favorite perennial. And now is a good time to actually take a look at where your perennials are, take a look at their condition. If they have dead wood, cut it out. If they need, as Katrina said, if they're shrub-like, give them a haircut. And if you have them too dense, like the Shasta daisies tend to want to spread, dig them up and share them with friends or put them in a new place in the garden.
Do you know I have Shasta daisies because someone shared?
And I did share.
Yes, and you didn't even know it. Tina gave some of her Shasta daisies, and theirs grew. And when it grew, they gave some to me. So before I really even knew Tina, I said, I have Tina's daisies.
It's one of my favorite things.
That's they're wonderful. They're just beautiful.
In my garden, they...
And the color goes with everything.
It does. They're white.
They're light. You can mix them with anything that's next to them.
Yeah.
It really makes your garden pop.
I have three favorite perennials. One are the Shasta daisies. One is sages and different varieties of sages. My favorite is the Mexican sage, but you have to have space for that because
it's a big boy.
Because it's a big boy. And then the third one is, oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank, with the orange Coreopsis. God, I had a momentary brain freeze. Coreopsis, which is orange and very modest in size. It only stays about a foot to 18 inches tall. And the reason that I like those three is they're virtually completely pest-resistant, disease-resistant. I just don't have any trouble with them.
No, you're right. I've had my Mexican sage for probably 12 years now.
Yeah, the Mexican sage in my yard is 12 years old, and it's died out in places. But
mine's never done it.
Oh, wow.
Mine's just, it keeps going. And same, I didn't think about it with the Shasta daisies. I don't have any issues with those either. My only issue is they don't last long enough. I mean, I like them blooming all year long because I like them so much.
Right. Speaking of bloom time, just so the audience knows, the Mexican sage is a fall bloomer, purple fall bloomer. So that's, you know, what a treat to have something blooming in the fall when we don't have a lot of other stuff blooming. The Shasta daisies are a May, June, July. That's when their heavy bloom is. But I get sporadic bloom, probably because I'm a little cooler than Katrina. I think I have half a dozen blooming right now. But, you know, it's just a single flower here and a single flower there. So they're pretty bulletproof if you like to have flowers.
Mine.
Yeah. So clean up your perennials. That's the message we're giving there.
Because everything's going to be growing soon, so it's easier to cut them back now than when they're in full, you know, full on, let's grow.
And the other reason is next month in March, you're going to be planting your full head off. So do your cleanup this month because you're going to be so busy planting next month, you're not going to have time to play with the perennials.
You know, and it's also so much easier if it's all done when you start planting.
Yeah.
You know, if you start with everything, your garden's cleaned up before you start planting. Some people try to do both at the same time. And for me, it's just kind of a mess.
Well, it's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And you don't get a lot done and you lose that vision. But once you've cleaned everything up, you can get a better picture of your garden.
Yeah. And another Master Gardener tip while you're doing this is, and I think this was our friend and sometimes guest on the show, Kay Haven's Master Gardener tip. When you are doing this cleanup and attending to your perennials and you discover a spot in your yard that needs a new plant, go ahead and dig that hole in February.
Yeah.
And put a 5-gallon, you know, or 1-gallon bucket in it, you know, whatever size hole you're digging, and save that space. And then what happens next month when it's time to plant the new plant, you're going to have that work already done, and you can just pop that plant right in that space.
That makes so much sense.
And you'll be so glad that you did it.
You know, Kay has always said, dig your holes before you buy your plants.
Because she's been to my house where there's the plant graveyard because I bought too many and didn't get them all planted.
Oh, I'm glad you're not the only one that does that.
My husband says to me, why do we have all these dead plants? Well, they never made it into the ground.
I'm like, don't these look pretty? And you're like, where are we going to put them? And it's like, and I have a big yard.
Yeah, well,
we both have big yards.
It's the time. You know, you run out of time. So don't overbuy and do what you can ahead of time, and you'll be happy. So we talked about perennial flowers and roses. Let's talk about annual flowers.
Okay.
So if you have cool season flowers, which would be your snapdragons, pansies, excuse me, larkspur, and others, keep deadheading them. They probably look fabulous in February. And give them a light fertilizer, maybe a little liquid fertilizer, and they'll keep blooming into May. And then when the weather turns really hot, they'll poop out. But if you're starting to lose some of them, you probably don't want to plant new cool season flowers. I would probably just prepare that soil a little bit, because in March you're going to be able to plant your warm season flowers.
Be patient, spend your time somewhere else, and plant in March.
Yes. The other thing is, if you planted a lot of bulbs, as I always do, and I always encourage people to do in the fall, they are going to be in full bloom this month. It's actually one of my favorite, prettiest times in the garden, because the freesias are going, the ranunculus are starting to go, the Dutch iris, anemones. It's just truly one of my favorite times in the garden, because I just love the bulbs, and it's a great time to pick bouquets. And if you planted sweet peas, it's a great time to pick sweet peas and bring them in the house and smell them. So enjoy your flower garden in February. And as things poop out, make room for your warm season stuff. Just one more word on bulbs, though. As your bulbs bloom and then the flowers are done, if you want them not to come back, you can pull the whole thing out. But if you want them to come back next year, and the ones that reliably come back, in my experience, are the narcissus, the Dutch iris, and the freesias, you have to leave the leaves on, because they use those leaves to make food and store that food in their bulbs for the next year's crop of flowers. So I know they look kind of ratty, and so one of the things I do is I will pull up the leaves with my hand and clip off the mangy looking ends, but I'll leave, you know, 8 to 10 inches of leaf still there, so that it can continue to photosynthesize and make food. But by tidying them up just a little bit, it doesn't bug me quite so much that that those leaves are fading. And then when they're completely dry and dead, then you pull them off, and the bulbs will just hang out over the summer, and then they'll come up again next fall.
Investment now for a future gain.
Yeah.
Surprise, huh?
Yep. So I think that takes care of flowers for us. What I would like to mention, because I know a lot of us have switched at least part of our yards to drought-tolerant stuff. I know my most of my slope and side yards and front yard actually are in drought-tolerant. And they actually look fabulous this time of year, because this is when they grow crazy, because they're getting a little rain and the weather's cooler, and they should look amazing. And the ones that bloom should be blooming. So just enjoy them.
Enjoy them. And then look at them and think about, would I like more of that?
Exactly. Because now, in February, you can still plant more.
Here's one thing. I was talking to the Orange County Fire Authority.
Oh.
So when you're planting your drought tolerance, there's a lot of drought tolerance that are wonderful to plant and aren't fire hazards, but there's some drought tolerance that burn and burn a lot. So that probably is a topic of another show.
Ooh, it totally should be a topic of another show.
But be careful when you're purchasing them. Just find out, look them up, and see how flammable they are.
If they're fuel.
Fuel for... You know, these fires this last year.
Oh, my gosh, it was so horrible.
So, anyways, that's something to think about, too, when you're thinking about drought tolerant.
Yes.
And you might look at what you already have and find out, you know, how much does that burn and how far away is it from my house?
Exactly. You want to have a defensible zone around your house.
It's really made me think.
Yeah. Well, Katrina's area was one of our areas affected.
Yeah, we were all evacuated.
In the fire of being evacuated. So it's forefront in your mind, as it should be in all of our
Yes, when you watch properties burn up from your living room. Yeah.
And are worried about your own burning up.
Oh, yeah, and your friends. And we were very fortunate here in Orange County, but we really need to be heads up.
Definitely.
Because we were really, that Santa Ana wind that affected us here in Orange County, it stopped. And I've never seen a seven-hour Santa Ana wind. It just stopped and got cooler right at the edge of the houses.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just, like, amazing. So we were super, super fortunate. So we really need to be heads up.
About what we're planting.
What we're planting in our yards. And that's my sermon for the day.
Yeah, no, good advice. But if you are going to plant some more drought-tolerant plants, do it this month or at the very latest next month. Some things you'll read will say plant into April and May, personally, I think that it's you'll have less success the later you plant these plants. They really go dormant in the summertime, and they do need to be irrigated in the summer, because until their roots are established, they're not drought tolerant.
No.
they need water.
You're going to use water when these plants start, especially with the
right.
small ones, so you're going to need water, water, water.
And that's why the best time to plant these drought tolerance is in the fall, so that they can take advantage of our winter rains and really get themselves established. But if you miss that opportunity and you still want to do it this month or at the latest next month. Do we have time to talk about lawns for a little bit?
We have about 5 minutes left to talk.
Perfect. Want to talk about lawns, because some of us still have a little bit of lawn. And lawns, while not drought tolerant, actually don't need to use as much water as we used to give them. Katrina and I learned this during this last drought. We both kept a little bit of lawn just because we have pretty big yards and have to have some sort of plants in those yards. And actually, the University of California was suggesting not to do away totally with lawns as long as you are caring for them properly.
If you're water-wise, you could have lawns.
You can. And so you can prepare right now to be water-wise for your lawns. And one of the ways that you can do that is to make sure that you have soil beneath your lawn that is accepting of the water. And so if you have not de-thatched, if you have what is called a warm season lawn that builds up thatch, you can de-thatch that lawn right now, and that allows water to get through more easily.
And could you tell people how to do that?
There are machines that you can rent, or you can ask your gardener to do it with the machine. It's basically a machine that comes through, looks kind of like claws mm-hmm. on it, and it just goes through the thatch and pulls out that. The thatch is actually kind of a matted brownish layer mm-hmm. of the grass. And so it goes through and kind of cuts that up and pulls it up, and then you rake it and take it away, and now your lawn doesn't have that barrier of that thatch to prevent water from getting down to the soil easily. And then for cool season lawns, I have a cool season lawn, and I like to aerate my lawn this time of year, and I just do it by hand. I just have it's a little device on a handle, and you step on it. It has two prongs mm-hmm. that go down into the soil. And my lawn isn't so huge that I can't do it by hand. I just do, you know, a little chunk, a 5 by 5 foot patch a few days in a row. And then the spacing between the holes is probably, what, about 8 inches or so.
Something
on those
like
things?
That.
Yeah. And so that way you have, you know, these little holes in your lawn. You really can't see it, though, because the blades of grass cover them up. But what it does allow also is when you then fertilize, because you want to fertilize your cool season lawns this month, it allows that water and fertilizer to get deeper into your lawn. And what that does is it encourages your lawn to develop deep roots so that you can water it less frequently. If you water less frequently but deeper, then you have a healthier lawn, and it gets to go farther in between without.
And it's absorbing; it absorbs it better.
Right, right.
Wow, and you know that really makes a huge difference. I have a good sized lawn still, and I'm still under my water allotment.
That's great.
You know, and I have dogs. You know, they like to play on it, and I have a big yard. I can't have plants everywhere.
Right.
You
right.
know, and it really, if you do what Tina says, you too have the possibility. But you also have to pay attention to your sprinkler system and what you do and how you do it.
Right.
But it's I enjoy having some lawn.
I do too. I do too. And I think that about do it for us today, time-wise?
I think we're about there, yeah.
There we go. Well, happy almost spring to everyone out there. Enjoy February. Think good thoughts that we get a little bit of rain, and happy gardening.
Indeed, indeed. Until next month, it's Tina and Katrina. All righty, have a great week and have a great month.